The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. And joining me as a special guest co-host tonight, we have back from the Inside Metal documentary series, producer Carl Alvarez. How are you, Carl?
Pretty good, Mark. Glad I can co-host here.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me. And on the documentary series, am I IDing you correctly? You're technically the producer of it? Is that what your role and title is?
Producer. There's like three producers, Bob, Joe Floyd, and I. So we're kind of a happy clan doing this Inside Metal series.
Cool. And I know most of the listeners already know where they can go to get the documentary series. We will have that linked through today's show notes again on talkingmetal.com. And of course, the way I watched it was on Amazon Prime streaming, which is great if you can watch it there. It looked and sounded great, and just a real great documentary you guys put together. Two-parter at this point, right? And it captures really the definitive LA metal scene, Inside Metal. So, again,
I would say yes.
Yeah. Carl, thanks for joining us. And, you know, what I really enjoyed about having you on the podcast, you were on two different podcasts, but that last one, you really started going into actual memories of the LA metal scene and just kind of little intimate inside moments that you witnessed. And I thought that was really cool. And, you know, I have a lot of just personal memories of being a heavy metal fan through the years too. And the listeners really loved hearing that stuff. So I thought maybe we would just kind of share, as two metal fans, two hard rock fans, some of our memories. And, you know, we encourage the listeners to tweet us with your memories and send me an email, go on Facebook. We have a comment section on talkingmetal.com. I'd love to hear from you guys. I'd love to hear what some of your early hard rock and metal memories are. And on that note, let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about the first concerts we both ever went to. And you obviously started going to concerts a little before I did. How old are you, Carl? Do you mind me mentioning?
I'm 51.
51. Okay. Well, I'm 47, so I'm probably about 3 or 4 years behind you, which makes total sense. So let's talk about our first concerts. First concert you ever saw, which you already told me what it is, and it's a good one. Let us know.
Back in Black, AC/DC, September 3rd, I believe, 1980.
Wow.
You know, I was really bummed when Bob Scott died. I wasn't at the age of really going to concerts when Highway to Hell came out.
Right.
Or being aware of what venues or where to go to see these shows. But by the time, a year later, I was definitely... I wasn't going to miss this one. And by that time, I had the whole catalog practically of AC/DC. So going to see I think Back in Black was just obviously out of the box record, and the record came out in July, and we saw him in September, right before school started when I was 15.
Where did you see him?
This was a big venue. It was actually outdoors. It was a Speedway in San Bernardino, California, which San Bernardino, I think we talked a little briefly about it. That's near where I lived in Redlands, California. But it, probably in the whole concert industry, it's like a secondary market. It's not like a prime market like L.A., but it is in Southern California. And it was they never really had shows at this Speedway outdoor thing. So it was actually a festival, if you can imagine. Right. It was Nantucket, I believe, that was on the bill. Blister Cult, Molly Hatchet, and AC/DC. So it was a real kind of all-dayer type thing. But, you know, I loved all those bands, but AC/DC was, you know, what we were going to see. So,
and that was a real interesting time for AC/DC because, of course, obviously the big thing was they got a new singer and they put out this record, which, you know, it went on to just sell millions and millions. It's one of the best-selling albums of all time. It's up there with Hotel California and Thriller. Back in Black is right there. I actually think it's overtaken Hotel California at this point. But that was a big record. And I was, again, a few years behind you. But the thing I remember when that record came out and Bon Scott died, I mean, AC/DC were getting popular in the U.S., but when that record hit, they just exploded, and it was almost like, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but Bon Scott's death really threw that band's name into the headlines, and they had to follow it up with something good, and they did, Back in Black. But I remember that Back in Black was exploding, and they were playing, you know, You Shook Me All Night Long on the radio, Back in Black, Shoot the Thrill. And then Dirty Deeds was re-released officially in this country. Like, you used to be able to buy it as an import, but they started pushing the song Dirty Deeds on radio right as Back in Black was, like, blowing up on radio. I'm talking about FM radio. At least that's how it was where I was living. So we were just getting hit with AC/DC. And for a kid who was still rather young at the time, you know, the floodgates just opened up because, again, AC/DC just exploded on the radio with Back in Black, and it wasn't just that record. It was like they were suddenly just going back into the catalog, and there was this real AC/DC renaissance going on, at least on the FM stations I was listening to.
Oh, that was another funny note to that, too. I don't know if you remember Dr. Demento. He used to play Big Balls on that show. So, you know, it, like you said, wow. They kind of covered a lot of fronts, you know, in terms of just knowing what AC/DC was about. To a lot of people, they were new. Maybe it had to do with the kind of the 80s. That was the beginning of the 80s, and obviously just a great record. But, you know, it caught on really slowly, and I think by the year, once the year came up, it was, like you said, everywhere you could hear those songs. And so when we went to see them, we were just fans early on and curious about the band, and they were playing, you know, 10 miles away from us. We weren't going to miss this. And, you know, just seeing them and seeing their just backline of amplifiers.
Right.
And just the thunderous stuff that was coming out from them. And then watching Angus Young, and this is my first concert, so I'm seeing Angus Young, and I'm going, oh, cool, when's this guy going to stop moving?
Right.
Because he's moving the whole time, and he didn't stop. He kept on going over and over and over, but it made it fun. And then obviously they went into the Bad Boy Boogie and him doing the kind of the striptease and pulling down the pants and, you know, that whole thing. So all of it was kind of just, it was a great end of summer type thing. Perfect concert before we went back to school. And all the kids were talking about it, you know, when we got back to school, because most of my class was at that show. So, or some of the class, I should say.
And so Angus was
Devo. You know, I don't know if I'd give you a parallel. Devo, you know, Freedom of Choice, it just came out like summer. So everybody was into Whip It, you know, and that video was just being banged hard on MTV. So those were the two kind of parallels that were happening being a high school kid.
Yeah. And the look of the band, you know, we always picture Brian Johnson with his hat on that became really a signature thing with Brian Johnson. But correct me if I'm wrong, on that tour, that was pre-hat for Brian Johnson. I think he came out and his hair was kind of almost Afro-esque, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. There's a photographer by the name of Chris Walter who took pictures of everybody. You can look at him online. He has a couple AC/DC shots from that particular show. And yeah, you're correct. He didn't wear the hat at all.
Yeah.
It was kind of puffy, but signature Brian Johnson though, you know.
Yeah.
Street clothes, jeans. I mean, the whole bit, you know. So.
Yeah, and you know, I also he really kind of did this throughout the rest of his time with AC/DC, but I felt like it was even more so in those early days. That he would really kind of just almost kind of stand on the side of the stage, and Angus was always front and center. At least that's, I saw them a little bit later on Fly on the Wall tour, and that's how it was then. Do you remember if that was how it was when you saw him on this tour?
Yeah, because obviously Angus is just the focal point hugely, but it seemed to be like Brian Johnson, he wasn't like off to the side of the stage, but I think he was kind of getting his bearings together. You know, they played in Europe, I think, before that. And these are like the first dates in America that they were playing. So it was kind of a getting acquainted perhaps, but you know, that probably seemed to be how they went about the shows, you know?
Yeah. And you know, nowadays I talk with people and I feel like there's among the hardcore music fans, sometimes there's a little bit of a backlash against the record Back in Black. And I think it's simply because it is just so popular and everyone knows that record. But personally, I just think that record is so perfect. Every song, just all the way through. And I know people are like, well, it's not, you know, it's not Bond. It's not, you know, Let There Be Rock, it's not Power Age, but that record for me is perfect hard rock, just all the way through.
I remember when it came out and I went to my cousin's house, and this is like the first time we're actually listening to a new record of AC/DC, you know. There wasn't old records that have already been out. This is actually the release date of the record. And we sat down and listened to it, and we were like, we weren't sure of it, but then we heard the songs and obviously, you know, Back in Black was just a cool tune, you know, that riff, the whole vibe of it. So we like that song and we start to like other songs. And so it was a new experience, but it was great for AC/DC to really not miss a step. I think if they would have missed a step, they wouldn't have really catapulted. Obviously, a good record helps. But, you know, coming out of Bon Scott's death in February of that year and just really laying a great record down after the experience and everything that goes behind the record and Back in Black, it's kind of a mourning, but yet it's a rebirth, and it has all the elements to, you know, be a great record. We didn't know this at the time, but as years go by, it's a perennial record that never goes away.
Absolutely. Let's get into a track off that record right now. This is What Do You Do for Money, Honey by AC/DC. Shoving, satisfied with nothing. You bet you must be getting old.
slow. So stop your lover to roll. Are you digging for gold? You make me wonder. Yes, I wonder. Yes, I wonder. Money. What do you do for money? Oh, honey. What do you do for money? Yeah. What do you do for money, honey? How do you get your kicks? What do you do for money, honey? How do you get your licks? Yo.
That was What Do You Do for Money, Honey by AC/DC, the third song off of Back in Black. Carl, my first concert, by the way, was at the Aragon Ballroom in Chicago, which was kind of, at the time, not the greatest neighborhood in the Chicagoland area. And I went with my
South
mom.
Side?
Yeah, right by Wrigley Field there. So I went with my mom and two friends from school, and she took us to see Heavy Penton, Saxon, and Motley Crue. This was the Shout at the Devil tour. Motley had been out on the road opening for Ozzy, and then they did their own headlining tour. It was like kind of a co-headlining thing with Saxon. And it was just a great, great night, and the energy level just through the roof. And such a they played every song off of Shout at the Devil except Danger. That was the only song they didn't play off that record. So, but great memories of that show. And
it's been 1984 then.
Yes. I bought the t-shirt and I still have it to this day, and it said Motley Crue Tour 1983-84, but I definitely saw them in 84. And that was, you know, I'd been to like a couple concerts with my parents, like Chuck Mangione and stuff, but that was my first rock concert for sure. And
so it's like your first impression. I mean, you were probably seeing Heavy Petting and going, "When's Motley Crue come on?" Or "When's Saxon?"
Yeah,
Saxon?
Well, you know, I had got the Crusader record by Saxon simply because I knew I was going to their concert and I wanted to be familiar with his songs. So Saxon, I really enjoyed. Heavy Petting, I didn't really know much about. But it was in Motley Crue. I was already had both of their records at that point. So, you know, I was totally into them. So it was an eye opening experience for me too, because I was like, I went in there and I had like this nerdy, like windbreaker jacket on, you know, and these were rock kids and metal heads and stuff at this concert. So I almost felt like, you know, a little out of place. I was kind of like had a little preppy vibe going on there, you know. So it was a little intimidating, but I loved it so much. And I honestly, the next day I started dressing differently. You know what I mean? It was that
life changer.
Yeah, it really was. It really was, and it was eye opening because I kind of came from this this preppy little suburban town where there weren't a lot of metal heads and stuff, and it was eye-opening that something was happening and there was a movement going on here. And I jumped on board. I was sold. And great, great memories of that show. Let's get into a little Motley Crue right now. This is a song that they did at the show. It's called Bastard. ¶¶ Bastard by Motley Crue. It used to be my favorite song for a while off of Shout at the Devil. Looking back, nowadays it's probably not, but as a kid there was like a 3-month period where I just lift the needle up and play that song over and over and over again. Great stuff. So Ozzy Osbourne was somebody I kind of, you know, gravitated towards when the solo records came out. I started hearing people talk about him at school, and he'd bit the head off a bat and all this, and all that stuff piqued my interest, and I ended up buying the Diary of a Madman record and went back from there. And it was, I didn't get to see him live until Ultimate Sin many years mm-hmm. later, but you saw him live very early on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Oakland Coliseum, July 4th, 1981. This was a kind of a really, if you ever seen the Ross Halfen photo of a stadium where Ozzy's on stage with Randy,
right,
looking out at the crowd, that's that show.
Wow.
Now that show in particular was, I had just seen Van Halen Fair Warning tour like 2 weeks prior to that. So this is like my next show. I saw that at the Forum. Second night, 3-night stand of Van Halen in L.A. And it was an awesome show. Life-changing, too, in another respect. But seeing Randy Rhoads, it was six bands that day, and Ozzy was the first band. And I remember it was my cousin Bert and I, we went up. We didn't take the BART up there. Oh, my sister took us. And we had got there, and they had already been playing, and like we wanted to see them so badly because we love Crazy Train, and the whole record was just a mind blower. It was that summer record basically of 1981, and just hearing Randy Rhoads play, it was really, I mean, sounds so cliche, but it was really electrifying. And you could feel, like, you could tell the band was on fire because he had 60,000 people who were ready for it. Seeing Ozzy, a lot of people just got there early. The place was packed,
right.
The frenzy that was occurring, that was happening in our eyes and ears, it was really mind-blowing. It was amazing. And just to hear Randy play, and that intensity and the loud energy that was coming off, so it was a really great show. And even after they did come off, and it was a long day too, I mean, that bill had Pratt Travers on there, Heart, Blue Oyster Cult.
Wow.
Can't remember who else. There are two other bands. REO Speedwagon. But it was a long day, but they won the day, hands down.
And who was playing with him at this point? I'm guessing that was Rudy was mm-hmm. already in, because what happened, if I remember correctly, was they release Diary, and then shortly after that, there wasn't a lot of time in between when they recorded Diary of a Madman, which had Rudy's picture on it originally, and Tommy Aldridge's picture, but those guys did not play on the record. And they joined the band, and they went out and were touring, and I believe they were out with Ozzy touring before Diary even came out, which again... Mm-hmm. featured Lee and Bob, you know, on drum and bass, but at the time, which was pretty common in those days, they tried to kind of fake it, and when you bought Diary, it was Rudy's picture on the inner sleeve.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. I actually met Ozzy 2 days before that. They had an in-store in Fremont, California, where my dad lives, and we went down to meet Ozzy Osbourne.
Wow.
And He was like, his belly, I remember just seeing him, because we were all, us kids were waiting. There was like 300 kids waiting to get our record signed. And we were hoping Randy would show up, but he never did, obviously. Wow. It was an Ozzy type thing. But he seemed really kind of out of it and burned out. You know, I'm like, oh, I hope he can pull off a great show, because he just, I don't know, maybe it was a drug-induced haze, or he was just tired, or they had actually been rehearsing down south before this tour. If you read Rudy Sarza's book, he talks about the whole thing. So like a week prior to the actual, which the concert I went to was called Day on the Green. And if you know the Bay Area, this Day on the Green, Bill Graham put these on.
Yeah.
long shows, different bands. I mean, amazing bills that occurred at the Oakland Coliseum where the Raiders played during and the A's played during the off season or the on season, whatever, however you look at it. But it was an event, really, and people really appreciated what Bill Graham did with these shows because they were so unique and so amazing, these lineups. So it was a treat to see Ozzy and Randy. And I always felt, as years went on, if I would have been 5 years older, I would have definitely went down to see Van Halen at the Starwood and Quiet Riot at the Starwood of the Whiskey to see Randy. I know I would have.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got to see it a little bit later on the grander scale, and I appreciated that too, because it was, those are my top 10 concerts, really, if you look at it. So in terms of what I saw, and but it was a chilling experience, definitely. You know, I don't know if kids could really say that there's something like that for them now, you know, but it's I appreciated it then and I appreciate it now.
Yeah, it was such a different time, and the fact that there wasn't YouTube and this, you know, everything streaming and so accessible, it, some of these things were much more intimate, I think, in a lot of ways for the people experiencing it, and special and valuable, you know. So I really think there, you know, and I'm sounding like an old man here, but there was a special time, let's just put it that way, that will never ever be repeated.
I would say we say now less is more, and that's really kind of the credo now. But back then it was less is more, but you got more.
Right.
Cool. Really.
Cool. Well, Carl, I'm sorry to cut this short, but we're going to have you back. Okay. Unfortunately, I got to hop on another call for an interview. We're going to have you back. I would love to hook up with you next week if you're available, and we'll do another one of these because there's a lot more to talk about. But sure, it's always great talking hard rock, talking metal with you. Where's the best place people can get in touch with you online?
Well, I have a personal Facebook page, you know, Carl Alvarez. You could probably find me there. Inside Metal has it. It's called Inside LA Metal because that's how we kind of started it. But that's kind of a primary location in terms of, you can reach me there too. I'm on Twitter, that Carl. That's my handle. Yeah, so those are the best places.
Cool.
To reach
Carl,
out.
What should we play here to wrap things up from Ozzy?
Let's just go Crowley, man. Okay. I can't talk.
Right on. Guys, thanks for joining us on Talking Metal. Check out the show notes on talkingmetal.com. We'll talk to you next time.